From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, September 28th, 2022.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by Seth Rigoletti, leadership coach. With the podcast, It's Not Personal, conversations about making work more enjoyable and rewarding. SethRigoletti.com.
The fundraising gap between incumbent Governor Janet Mills and her top challenger, former Governor Paula Page, is widening. But as Kevin Miller reports, outside groups are spending more money than either candidate in Maine's gubernatorial race.
According to the latest campaign finance reports, Mills has raised more than $4.8 million for her reelection campaign. That's more than double the $2.2 million collected so far by her Republican opponent. Despite the difference in fundraising, the two had roughly the same amount of money in the bank as they head into October. Mills reported $1.4 million, while LePage had $1.3 million. Independent Sam Hunkler, meanwhile, has spent less than $4,000 on his long-shot campaign. As expected, the major parties and outside groups are poised to be the big spenders in this election. The organization Better Maine, which is a spinoff of the Democratic Governors Association, has spent more than $3.2 million to boost Mills. And the Maine Republican Party has laid out $1.2 million to help LePage, who has been outspent in both of his two previous successful campaigns for governor. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration got an earful from Maine fishermen at a virtual meeting yesterday evening. The agency is collecting feedback on further restrictions aimed at protecting the endangered right whale population. NOAA imposed an initial set of restrictions last year, which agency officials believe will reduce the risk of death and serious injury to whales by 46%. The agency is now considering a cap on vertical lines, trap limits, and more seasonal closures in the Gulf of Maine. NOAA officials say final rulemaking is likely 2 years away, but Patrick Kelleher, commissioner for the Maine Department of Marine Resources, says the timeline is too short to provide meaningful input.
NOAA should do its best to give an understanding of what these impacts are and hear the people from the state of Maine and up, as well as up and down the East Coast. These acts are potentially going to be devastating.
Several hundred people attended the virtual meeting, and several dozen others gathered at listening events organized by the Maine Lobstermen's Association in Ellsworth and Brunswick. The director of a state agency that provides free attorneys to low-income Mainers facing criminal charges says his office is seeing a lot of interest from lawyers who want to join a new public defender's unit. Earlier this year, state lawmakers provided money to hire five public defenders that would serve clients in mostly rural areas of Maine. The Commission on Indigent Legal Services sought the positions because the agency is struggling to find private attorneys willing to represent clients. Executive Director Justin Andrus says those job openings were recently posted.
We're getting applicants. We're getting calls. There is a ton of interest. We have local people. We have people from away. It's really fantastic.
Maine is the only state that relies on private attorneys to represent low-income defendants. ISO New England has warned that supply chain issues and price spikes for natural gas could mean rolling blackouts during lengthy frigid periods this winter. Maine Public Utilities Commission Chairman Phil Bartlett says action is already being taken to ensure supplies can be delivered this winter.
One of the barriers to getting natural gas brought in and the winter is the Jones Act, which limits the ability of ships to come into port to bring the natural gas. So we certainly, as a region, have been in touch with Washington, D.C. and the White House to communicate the need for potentially Jones Act waiver if things got really, really tight.
Bartlett says numerous strategies will eventually allow New England to be less reliant on natural gas, including large wind and solar projects in the development stage and increased energy storage. A study shows Maine has 50 megawatts of storage capacity now, but plans to have 400 by the end of the decade to help supply power during hours of the day when wind or solar may be offline. Meanwhile, Summit natural gas customers will see higher bills this heating season. Maine's Public Utilities Commission on Tuesday approved a rate hike to cover the company's increasing costs. Summit says the volatile supply market and increasing price of natural gas make the adjustment necessary to ensure the company has enough fuel to supply customers. The PUC increase for Summit is separate from the company's rate hike request to cover a planned expansion of its service area. The PUC will hold another hearing about that request on Thursday in Hollowell. Thomas College in Waterville says it's changing requirements for students in its education program in hopes of helping to alleviate school staffing shortages. In a release, the school says it will now require students to spend 200 hours in the classroom before starting their advanced field work and student teaching. The college is encouraging students to work those hours as substitutes in Maine schools. According to the Kennebec Journal, Thomas enrolls about 100 students in its School of Education. And John Moody, the superintendent for Skowhegan-based SAD 54, says those additional staff members could make a big difference in his district, which is currently in need of substitutes and nearly a dozen ed techs.
So I'm excited for colleges that are willing to take this step and have their students who want to get into schools kind of leverage that and also provide a service to the district.
The online job board Serving Schools lists dozens of Maine districts with needs for ed techs and teachers. Moody says his district is also considering raising pay to help attract more staff. And in a look at the weather for tonight, it'll be partly cloudy with more clouds in the north and mountains, lows in the 40s statewide. We'll see more sun tomorrow with a few lingering clouds in the north, highs from the 50s in the north to the mid-60s elsewhere. More sunny and clear skies for the weekend, sunny with temperatures in the low 60s on Friday, a bit warmer on Saturday, mostly sunny with highs in the mid to upper 60s across the state. Former Republican Governor Paula Page today tried to connect Democratic Governor Janet Mills to claims that the federal government is using taxpayer funds to distribute free pipes to smoke crack and methamphetamine. While the broader assertion against the Biden administration has previously been debunked, LePage's sensational claims illustrate a stark divide in how he would approach substance abuse disorder compared to Mills, who he's attempting to defeat in November. Steve Missler reports.
LePage's press event was set against Portland's Deering Oaks Park and the duck pond that city police recently asked to be drained so it could investigate a recent shooting. From there, and in the foreground of a recently cleared encampment of unhoused people, LePage launched a series of accusations against his political rival, calling her approach to the opioid epidemic a failure and blaming her for a spike in violent crime in the state's largest city.
Janet Mills is fueling the crime and drugs crisis in Maine.
LePage proceeded to claim that the Mills administration is directing people with substance abuse disorder to organizations that are providing free crack pipes.
Janet Mills is using taxpayer money to send people to places where they can get free crack pipes. This is outrageous. For most Mainers, it is insane. As governor, I will put a stop to it.
The former governor's claim is anchored in a story by the Washington Free Beacon, a conservative website that recently claimed that one of its reporters obtained crack pipes at the Sanford location of the harm reduction organization Maine Access Points. The organization is in line to receive a portion of a $1.2 million federal grant that was awarded by the Biden administration this summer to assist with state substance abuse efforts, and it's one of the groups that the state recommends as a resource for people suffering from substance abuse disorder. While the Beacon reported that Maine Access Points has yet to receive the federal funds and that the pipes were provided separately from the so-called safe smoking kits allowed under the federal grant program, LePage said the state should not be directing people with substance abuse disorder to organizations that provide drug paraphernalia.
I understand the need to try to help people recover from addiction. However, the tactics of these organizations are concerning. I do not support handing out crack pipes and drug kits by organizations receiving taxpayer funding.
What I saw today was that he had not changed and he does not care about my community.
Courtney Allen, director of the Maine Recovery Advocacy Project, says she wanted to believe the former governor had changed his approach to substance abuse disorder when he announced a bid for a third non-consecutive term last year. But Allen, who herself is in recovery, says she saw a local politician channeling national rhetoric to attack the harm reduction strategy from which she has benefited.
He does not care whether or not my friends are dying on the streets. He's using them as backdrops to his press conferences so that he can get hits in the media.
Harm reduction is a treatment strategy that aims to keep people alive while they're using drugs, such as providing sterilized needles to prevent the transmission of disease or access to the overdose reversal drug naloxone.
They keep people alive. They reduce the risk of the transmission of hepatitis and HIV in our communities, and they act as an access point for treatment and recovery support services.
Allen says those type of services, as well as medication-assisted treatment, kept her and her unborn son alive when she was 19 and using heroin. Now Allen is in recovery. She went to graduate school and is currently serving on the Augusta City Council. Allen also recalled how LePage vetoed several proposals to expand access to naloxone, the overdose reversal drug.
That's blood on your hands. Like, I cannot imagine a Maine today on the front lines of the opiate crisis without the access, the readily available access that we have to naloxone.
LePage was roundly criticized for declaring in 2016 that naloxone merely, quote, extends lives. And he stood by that position Wednesday while criticizing Mills' focus on harm reduction policies.
I am hostile to it because I look at Narcan as a method of sustaining life and extending life. I don't see it as a way of fixing the problem.
LePage went on to say that he has a specific problem with taxpayer-funded naloxone and that people who require it should have to pay for it if they're revived more than once or twice. Courtney Allen with the Maine Recovery Access Project said the governor's comments were inhumane.
You're literally talking about somebody on the ground, their face is blue and they can't breathe, and we're going to be asking them for their checkbook?
Beyond his criticism of the Mills administration's harm reduction strategies, LePage's broader point was that his opponent's approach isn't working. He noted the record 626 overdose deaths in Maine in 2021, a grim statistic and a record in the fight against opioids. In 2020, the second year of Mills' first term, Maine had the ninth highest drug death rate in the country for every 100,000 residents. Maine had the eighth highest rate in 2017 and the 10th highest rate in 2016 when LePage was in office and pursuing a law enforcement-centric approach. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And the Mills administration just responded in a statement that reads in part, "The governor believes that every person who dies from a drug overdose is a tragic loss. Since taking office, Governor Mills has implemented evidence-based best practices to combat the opioid epidemic, including widely distributing naloxone to save lives and increasing treatment and recovery options." The statement went on to say that today, 93%... The statement went on to say that today, 93% of the people who overdose survive thanks to that approach. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, Jennifer Finney Boylan is the author of 18 books, and she's the inaugural Anna Quinlan Writer in Residence at Barnard College of Columbia University. She joins us to talk about her recent Washington Post column, "Is Being Transgender a Medical Condition?" We'll also discuss her soon-to-be-released book, Mad Honey. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thank you for listening.